that flattened itself against the glass, hungrily watching her. And she knew it was there. She knew it was looking at her just that way. She played up to it. She gave herself little airs. Sometimes she even pointed at it, crying, "Isn't that the most terrible thing you've ever seen? Isn't that ghoulish?" It was on the other side of the veranda, after all. And besides, it couldn't touch her, could it, Clemenceau? She was an American woman, wasn't she, Clemenceau? And she'd just go right away to her consul. Clemenceau, curled in her lap, with her torn antique brocade bag, a grubby handkerchief, and a pile of letters from home on top of him, sneezed for reply. The other tables were empty. A glance passed between the American and the topknots. She gave a foreign little shrug. They waved an understanding biscuit. But he saw nothing. Now he was still. Now from his eyes you saw he listened. "Hooey zip zoo," sounded the lift. The iron cage clanged open. Light, dragging steps sounded across the hall, coming towards him. A hand, like a leaf, fell on his shoulder. A soft voice said, "Let's go and sit over there, where we can see the drive. The trees are so lovely." And he moved forward with the hand still on his shoulder, and the light, dragging steps beside his. He pulled out a chair, and she sank into it, slowly, leaning her head against the back, her arms falling along the sides. "Won't you bring the other up closer? It's such miles away." But he did not move.
"Where's your shawl?" he asked.
"Oh." She gave a little groan of dismay. "How silly I am. I've left it upstairs on the bed. Never mind. Please don't go for it. I shan't want it. I know I shan't."
"You'd better have it."
And he turned and swiftly crossed the veranda into the dim hall with its scarlet plush and gilt furniture. Conjurer's furniture. Its notice of services at the English church. Its green baize board with the unclaimed letters climbing the black lattice. Huge presentation clock that struck the hours at the half hours. Bundles of sticks and umbrellas and sunshades in the clasp of a brown wooden bear. Past the two crippled palms, two ancient beggars at the foot of the staircase. Up the marble stairs, three at a time, past the life-size group on the landing of two stout peasant children with their marble pinnies full of marble grapes. And along the corridor, with its piled-up wreckage of old tin boxes, leather trunks, canvas holdalls, to their room. The servant girl was in their room, singing loudly while she emptied soapy water into a pail. The windows were open wide, the shutters put back, and the light glared in. She had thrown the carpets and the big white pillows over the balcony rails. The nets were looped up from the beds. On the writing table, there stood a pan of fluff and match ends. When she saw him, her small, impudent eyes snapped, and her singing changed to humming. But he gave no sign. His eyes searched the glaring room. Where the devil was the shawl?
"Vous désirez, monsieur?"
mocked the servant girl. No answer. He had seen it. He strode across the room, grabbed the grey cobweb, and went out, banging the door. The servant girl's voice at its loudest and shrillest, following him along the corridor.
"Oh, there you are. What happened? What kept you? The tea's here, you see. I've just sent Antonio off for the hot water. Isn't it extraordinary? I must have told him about it 60 times at least, and still he doesn't bring it. Thank you. That's very nice. One does just feel the air when one bends forward."
"Thanks."
He took his tea and sat down in the other chair.
"No, nothing to eat."
"Oh, do. Just one. You had so little at lunch, and it's hours before dinner."
Her shawl dropped off as she bent forward to hand him the biscuits. He took one and put it in his saucer.